The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now, I have to admit, I've always thought that the name of this show, Century of Lies, sounds a bit strident. And, well, that's because our modern drug war is strident and excessive, and that's putting it much too mildly. The war on drugs is built on a foundation of lies. In regard to the century part, at the federal level, the modern drug war in the U.S. has its roots in the Harrison Narcotics Act of 1914, which was preceded by the International Opium Convention at The Hague in 1912, led by people like Dr. Hamilton Wright and his wife Elizabeth Washburn. At this point, it's been more than a century, but this is a radio program, not a clock. And really, 113 years of lies at last count just doesn't really roll off the tongue. Century of Lies is just easier to say. And as names go, you have to admit it's kind of catchy. I wonder sometimes if there are listeners out there who found this show based on the name, expecting strident and all that kind of stuff, militant and then got confused because my style, and I'm using the word style quite wrongly, is moderate, kind of low-key. Hopefully those folks have kept tuning in, a low-key style and a moderate tone, but when it comes to drug policy, you know we've moved a long way beyond just reform. What I'm about is a drug policy revolution. That drug policy revolution stands on four principles, and they're simple to elucidate. They are safe supply as substance of choice, safe spaces in which to consume those substances, decriminalization of people who use drugs, the decolonization of drug policies. Simple metrics, how close do policies get to achieving the goals? Drug war is the antithesis of good policy. It's foolish. We've been on this particular march of folly for well over 100 years, and the current Congress and White House seem determined to keep us marching along in that foolish direction. In the previous session of Congress, H.R. 467, the Halt Fentanyl Act, made it through the House and was stopped in the Senate. Proving that bad ideas are hard to kill, that legislation, slightly, arguably, cosmetically modified, has been reintroduced as H.R. 27, the Halt All Lethal Trafficking of Fentanyl Act. H.R. 27 has been fast-tracked, which is a polite way of saying it's being jammed down our throats by the GOP. Introduced January 3rd of this year, the House has already passed H.R. 27, February 6th, in a roll call vote 312-108. The Senate received H.R. 27 on February 10th. The bill was read twice and referred to the Committee on the Judiciary. At the time of this recording, Senate Judiciary is scheduled to hold a hearing on that bill Thursday, February 13th. I'll report on that hearing on the next show. Fortunately, Committee Chair Grassley started working up to this early, so this week we're going to listen in on a hearing the Senate Judiciary Committee held February 4th, entitled The Poisoning of America, Fentanyl, Its Analogs, and the Need for Permanent Class Scheduling. Let's start with opening statements. First, here's the Judiciary Committee Chairman, Charles Grassley, Republican of Iowa.
Well, we welcome everybody for this very important hearing. Obviously, you know it's on fentanyl and fentanyl-related substances. Before I begin, I want to take a moment to welcome members in the audience. We have about 30 guests, including parents of kids who have tragically died from fentanyl poisoning, as well as law enforcement officers who have a strong interest in this issue. We thank you all very much for your support of this hearing by being here. Fentanyl accounts for a vast majority of drug overdose deaths in the United States every year. In the last full year for which we have data, that'd be 2 years ago, around 75,000 lives were lost to fentanyl alone. And that happens to work out to be about 200 people dying every day. We titled this hearing, quote, "The Poisoning of America," end of quote, because most Americans don't know that they're taking fentanyl. Many are children who think they're taking something else that turns out to be laced with fentanyl. There are countless families with tragic stories. One family in Iowa, the Irwine family, Lisbon, Iowa, is one of them. Lori Irwine sent us a letter that I'd like to introduce into the record. And I'll do that without objection. Lori's youngest son, Bailey, was taken on April the 5th, 2022, 22 years old. He was not a drug addict. He did not think he was taking fentanyl, but the pill he took was laced with it. Lori wrote, quote, "Fentanyl stole our son's future and the joy of watching Bailey marry the love of his life, have a mother-son dance, watch him buy his first home, watching him become a loving father, and her joy of having more grandchildren. We will never know if any of his children, our grandchildren, would have Bailey's curly hair, his cute, smirky smile, or his twinkling blue eyes. There will always be an empty chair at our family gathering, whether it's Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter, birthday, dinner parties. His voice and laughter will be forever silenced," end quote. Maybe the saddest part of the fentanyl crisis is that so many parents can tell a similar story of loss. In fact, we have many of them with us here today, including two of our witnesses. I want to tell the parents in the audience today, thank you for being here. Thank you for making your voices heard. Thank you for doing what you can do to keep other parents from going through what they've gone through. How long do we have to keep suffering through this attack on our children? This is not an easy problem to solve, but there are certain parts of the problem that are simple to address. For one thing, common sense border control will help stem the flow of fentanyl. We have no idea how many pounds of fentanyl were carried in the gotaways. That will never show up in any statistics. We also have no idea how many surges of illegal immigrants have been used by the cartels as distraction to push drugs through our understaffed ports of entry. Thankfully, the Trump administration has taken this threat seriously. Another simple thing to address is fentanyl knockoffs. Fentanyl is a substance easily changed by drug cartels to bypass the legal scheduling while becoming even more deadly. That's why in 2018, the Drug Enforcement Administration scheduled fentanyl drug offs as a class using a formula created by an emergency room doctor. He's here today, and I thank you for coming, and he'll tell us more about that problem. Congress temporarily extended the scheduling over and over. We've played this game for too long. It's time to make this temporary scheduling permanent so that the drug cartels do not have the opportunity to flood our country with even deadlier versions of fentanyl. Last week, Senator Cassidy and I introduced a bipartisan bill to do just that. Seven Democratic senators co-sponsored it. We should pass that bill quickly and because of the temporary scheduling that we last passed expires again on March 31st. We must get this done. We must also support President Trump's attempt to secure the border and deal with the Mexican drug cartel. Americans' children need us to act.
That was Senator Charles Grassley, Republican of Iowa, chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Those were his opening remarks at a hearing entitled The Poisoning of America, which the Senate Judiciary Committee held February 4th. Charles Grassley was first elected to the United States Senate when I was a senior in high school. Chuckles is 91 years old. He turns 92 in September. 91-year-old Charles Grassley is the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Well, we heard from the chair. Now let's hear from the ranking member of the Senate Committee on the Judiciary, Senator Richard Durbin, Democrat of Illinois.
Certainly do, Chairman Grassley, and I'm glad you held this hearing. This is a bipartisan issue, as it should be, to discuss fentanyl and the devastating impact that opioid addiction has on America. In just a decade, this synthetic opioid has emerged as the deadliest drug in American history. All it takes is 2 milligrams. That's a fraction of the size of a penny to cause an overdose. It is so cheap that dealers are lacing lethal amounts into street drugs like cocaine and heroin, and their buyers are none the wiser. There's an overdose crisis in America, but we've learned that evidence-based solutions reduce death. In fact, in 2023, overdose deaths actually decreased for the first time since 2018, going down by more than 10%. We need to look at every factor that contributes to this reduction: counseling and treatment, training for first responders, naloxone to our hardest hit communities, all make a difference. We must also address how this poison gets in the hands of the most vulnerable people in America, our kids. Too often, fentanyl is peddled in the open on some of the world's largest social media platforms. Last Congress, the Judiciary Committee advanced several bipartisan bills that would finally hold these companies accountable and demand safeguards be put in place to protect our children. One of the bills is the Cooper-Davis Act. Cooper is a 16-year-old Kansas teen who tragically lost his life to a fentanyl-laced pill he bought through Snapchat. This bill would require big tech companies to take a more proactive role in stopping drug dealers from using their platforms. Sadly, Cooper is not the only teen who has lost his life to drugs peddled on social media. Bridget Noring is here to testify today. Her son, Devin, tragically died after taking a fentanyl-laced pill he thought was Percocet that he purchased over Snapchat. There's a lawsuit that she'll tell us about from the parents of those who were victims through Snapchat. In the coming days, I'll join Senators Marshall, Shaheen, and others to reintroduce what we call Cooper-Davis and Devin Noring Act. I hope the committee will again advance this critical legislation on a bipartisan basis. And I hope that Congress will finally allow these companies to be sued by their victims' families so they can be held accountable in a court of law. Enough teens have died due to big tech's deliberate indifference. We must also acknowledge the role the U.S. has played in arming cartels to the teeth. We send hundreds of thousands of firearms south of our border in an iron river, and the cartels cash men. They facilitate the use of violence to traffic fentanyl into the United States. Both state and federal law enforcement agencies are on the front lines of protecting our communities from fentanyl and other opioids. But detection is getting more difficult. Fentanyl is so potent and moved in quantities so small that high-value shipments can easily be hidden. As a result, law enforcement need access to technology and resources to quickly and efficiently detect these drugs. This includes expanding non-intrusive inspection capability, making life-saving naloxone widely available, and adequately funding state and local law enforcement. The funding freeze, which you're talking about, if it's going to stop the efforts of law enforcement to combat fentanyl, is a bad idea. The same is true of the recent order diverting federal law enforcement agents, including from the DEA and ATF, away from combating fentanyl and firearms trafficked by cartels and working instead on a mass deportation effort. As a reminder, the vast majority of fentanyl and other legal drugs enter the U.S. and are smuggled by American citizens through legal ports of entry. I'm also gravely concerned about the negative impact of mass removals of senior career law enforcement at Department of Justice and FBI on it and our ability to hold traffickers accountable to cut off the supply of fentanyl. The recent actions we've seen distract us from the need to take a comprehensive, bipartisan approach to tackling this crisis, including investing in addiction prevention and treatment, enforcing and strengthening our gun laws, giving federal, state, and local law enforcement the resources they need to do their jobs effectively. Getting fentanyl off the streets is a Herculean task that will require all of us to come together and work across the aisle to make this country healthier and safer.
That was Senator Richard Durbin, Democrat of Illinois, ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Those were his introductory remarks at a hearing entitled The Poisoning of America, which the Senate Judiciary Committee held February 4th. In fairness, I must add that Richard Durbin was first elected to the U.S. Senate in 1996. Dick is 80 years old, turns 81 in November. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now let's hear from one of the witnesses at that Senate hearing. Cecilia Farfán-Méndez, Ph.D., is an affiliated researcher with the Institute on Global Conflict and Cooperation at the University of California, San Diego.
Thank you for conducting this hearing and the opportunity to explain why saving lives in North America requires productive engagement with Mexico. I appreciate the invitation to participate. I am an expert on organized crime and U.S.-Mexico security cooperation. As an alumna of the Fulbright Program, I am convinced that transnational problems require transnational solutions. To the families who testified today, I acknowledge your grief. There are no actions that can reverse the tragedies you have experienced. My testimony today does not seek to invalidate yours. On the contrary, it is precisely because I have witnessed and collaborated with families on both sides of the border that have lost loved ones to overdoses, homicides, and disappearances that I am here to offer what I believe is a more helpful and sustainable path forward. On January 22nd, Secretary Rubio stated that America's foreign policy must be justified by answering three simple questions. Does it make America safer? Does it make America stronger? Does it make America more prosperous? As a scholar who has dedicated her professional career to studying and working towards constructive U.S.-Mexico relations, it is my strong professional opinion that the United States can only be safer, stronger, and prosperous if its neighbors are afforded the same opportunity. Suffering on both sides of the border is inextricably linked. The U.S. is facing one of its worst public health crises due to the availability of illicitly manufactured fentanyl, and Mexico faces its own lethal epidemic with 70% of homicides perpetrated with a firearm. More than 40% of Americans know someone who has died from an opioid overdose. Equally important, homicide is the leading cause of death for men ages 25 to 44, and the second cause of death for women ages 15 to 24 in Mexico. Worryingly, the urgency to save lives is reviving the worst policy failures of the war on drugs. With thousands of lives at risk on both sides of the border, it is urgent that the U.S. and Mexico implement policies based on facts. Through their public sectors, civil society, and academia, both countries have developed robust evidence on how to acquire and maintain the health and safety of our communities. Fentanyl and firearms trafficking have changed dynamics in criminal markets, but these changes are not as simple as prevailing narratives of organized crime suggest. Even though places like Sinaloa, Mexico, have been portrayed as a Shangri-La for criminality, transnational drug trafficking in Mexico to the U.S. is not masterminded by three men hiding in the mountains. There is no special narco highway connecting the highlands of Sinaloa to the street of L.A. or Philadelphia. But actors in Mexico and the U.S. that take advantage of legal economies for the advancement of illicit activities. For example, the most recent data from the U.S. Sentencing Commission shows that for fiscal year 2023, 86.4% of people sentenced for fentanyl trafficking were U.S. citizens. Serious policy conversations on addressing mortality caused by synthetic drugs cannot be separate from firearms trafficking. Low production costs are often cited as a key reason suppliers moved away from heroin and into synthetic opioids like fentanyl. Overlooked in this conversation is that the same has happened with firearms and ammunition. The ease of acquiring firearms from the U.S. has lowered the cost of perpetrating violence for criminal groups in Mexico. Even though there are significant variations as to the frequency and ways criminal groups use violence, they all must issue credible threats on their ability to perpetrate this violence. Their businesses depend on it. The newer and the more sophisticated the armament is, then the more credible these threats become. Why intimidate potential victims with a rifle left over from the Mexican Revolution when your arsenal can include 50 caliber weapons? This strategy has paid off for organized crime, including those involved in fentanyl trafficking. According to data released by the ATF, of the firearms recovered in Mexico that were submitted for tracing, more than two-thirds were sourced from the U.S. Today, 74% of Mexicans believe criminal groups have more and better weapons than the armed forces. Access to legally trafficked weapons from the U.S. has allowed Mexican criminal groups to amass both a tremendous capacity for violence and a troubling capacity to intimidate. Simply stated, by failing to address firearms trafficking to Mexico, the U.S. is subsidizing the operating costs of criminal groups. It is as if cartels receive an annual aid package with state-of-the-art technology to carry out the crimes this Congress wants to stop. Our shared tragedies are two sides of the same coin. The silver lining is that there's no secret solution awaiting to be discovered. Actions available to Congress, like the Stop Arming Cartels Act, can contribute to stemming the devastating effects of this public health crisis and must be implemented through U.S.-Mexico security cooperation. Thank you for your time, and I look forward to your questions.
That was Cecilia Farfán-Méndez, Ph.D., an affiliated researcher with the Institute on Global Conflict and Cooperation at the University of California, San Diego, testifying at a hearing entitled The Poisoning of America, Fentanyl, Its Analogs, and the Need for Permanent Class Scheduling, which the Senate Judiciary Committee held February 4th. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh.
America's public enemy number one in the United States is drug abuse. In order to fight and defeat this enemy, it is necessary to wage a new all-out offensive. I have asked the Congress to provide the legislative authority and the funds to fuel this kind of an offensive.
From the Senate to the House Committee on Energy and Commerce's Subcommittee on Health held a hearing February 6th entitled Combating Existing and Emerging Illicit Drug Threats. Let's hear parts of that. One of the witnesses at this hearing was Regina LaBelle, J.D., a professor of addiction policy at Georgetown University, where she founded and directs the Master of Science in Addiction Policy and Practice program at the Graduate School of Arts and Sciences. Professor LaBelle is also the director of the Center on Addiction Policy at the O'Neill Institute for National and Global Health Law at Georgetown Law. Under the Biden administration, she was the acting director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
I'm really pleased to be joined here today by some of my students, who are here to learn how to develop a bipartisan approach to reducing overdoses and improving the lives of people who have substance use disorder or who are affected by addiction. I also serve in the National Advisory Council on Drug Abuse at the National Institutes of Health. However, today I speak to you in my personal capacity. So for over 15 years, I've worked on drug policy in both government and at Georgetown, and I've seen bipartisan efforts lean to meaningful action. And I've also seen firsthand the impact of the overdose crisis. The grieving families who have lost loved ones remain always present in our mind as we work on these issues. I've also celebrated with those in recovery, witnessing the power of resilient, strong support systems and effective policies. Now, we know that since 2000, over 1 million Americans have died from overdoses. And recent data from August of 2023 to August of 2024 shows a 20% decrease. This is still unacceptably high. Overdose deaths are still increasing among Black, Indigenous, and Hispanic communities. And the majority of these deaths, as we're talking about today, involve synthetic opioids like fentanyl, often mixed with dangerous substances like xylazine. So obviously, you have to take decisive action on this issue. Addressing the threat of synthetic drugs requires a comprehensive strategy. First, transnational efforts. Strengthening law enforcement cooperation to disrupt transnational criminal organizations. Illicit fentanyl is manufactured using precursor chemicals from China and processed in Mexico and then transited into the United States. Disrupting these supply chains requires international collaboration, counter-narcotics cooperation, and aggressive prosecution of financial crimes that sustain the drug trade. Public health, expanding access across the continuum of care. Prevention, so that we can equip parents and communities with the tools to recognize early signs of mental health and substance use. Expanding access to naloxone that saves lives. So as we know that states like Tennessee have documented over 103,000 overdose reversals through naloxone distribution. Federal investment in evidence-based treatment that includes medications for opioid use disorder is essential. And Congress took an important step by passing, in a bipartisan manner, the Mainstreaming Addiction Treatment Act. It removed outdated barriers to medication access. But more work, obviously, is needed. And our criminal justice system is part of the solution. The federal approval of Medicaid 1115 waivers allows states to use federal Medicaid matching funds to treat people before they are released from a jail or prison, and this improves reentry outcomes. The workforce, investing in workforce and identifying, tracking emerging drug threats. So we have to equip our public health and law enforcement agencies with the ability to detect and respond to new synthetic drug threats. States like Rhode Island and North Carolina are leading the way with drug monitoring programs that identify emerging substances and issue public health alerts. Continued support for the federal workforce, including CDC, State Department, the Drug Enforcement Administration, and the Office of National Drug Control Policy, is also critical to ensuring a whole-of-government response. The best way to address this issue is through an all-of-the-above strategy and one that integrates law enforcement, public health, and the workforce investment. By working together, we can disrupt illicit drug supply chains, expand treatment and recovery services, and look around the corner so we're prepared for the next emerging threat. This is a bipartisan issue, and it affects every one of our communities, and solutions have to be pursued with urgency and unity.
That was Professor Regina LaBelle, J.D., Director of the Center on Addiction Policy at the O'Neill Institute for National and Global Health Law at Georgetown Law, testifying before the House Committee on Energy and Commerce's Subcommittee on Health at a hearing February 6th entitled Combating Existing and Emerging Illicit Drug Threats. While we still have time, let's hear a bit more from that House Committee hearing. Here's one of the subcommittee members, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Democrat of New York, asking questions of Professor LaBelle.
Would it be fair to say that Medicaid is actually one of the most important and strongest protections we have in the opioid crisis in the United States?
Yes. It treats a lot of people with addiction who would not otherwise be able to receive care.
And cutting off Medicaid and cutting off access to Medicaid could potentially increase the fentanyl crisis in the United States and certainly result in deaths from the fentanyl crisis.
I think it's safe to say that if Medicaid were significantly reduced, more people would die of overdoses.
So we're talking about the prospect of cutting Medicaid as exploding the fentanyl crisis in the United States. And I imagine you see in many communities where there are fentanyl, when there's widespread fentanyl use, there's also large interplays with the Medicaid system, correct?
Yes.
Can you explain that a little bit further, what you see?
So, I mean, people are, especially in Medicaid expansion states, I mean, one area that I keep bringing up, but it's so important, and we've done a lot of work on this at Georgetown, is people upon leaving incarceration are at 10 times greater risk of overdose.
Mm-hmm.
And so cutting off Medicaid for that population will leave them not only probably more mortality, but also increase their risk. They're just going to end up back in prison.
That was Professor Regina LaBelle, J.D., Director of the Center on Addiction Policy at the O'Neill Institute for National and Global Health Law at Georgetown Law, answering questions before the House Committee on Energy and Commerce's Subcommittee on Health at a hearing February 6th entitled Combating Existing and Emerging Illicit Drug Threats. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for community radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's audio port service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. Find this edition of Century along with an archive of past shows at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. You'll find a link there to subscribe to the Century of Lies podcast. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long.
For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.